This past summer certainly brought us some challenging days in terms of heavy rain, thunderstorms, sewers unable to handle the fast and furious downpours. And all of that is giving scientists cause for concern, including my next guest. Dr. Larissa Larson is an associate professor in the Urban and Regional Planning Program at the University of Michigan, and she joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much.
I have to say, having just in the last couple of weeks been caught in two monster downpours where you think it's going to end, it doesn't. We were in Ferndale, and we were watching Nine Mile Road. It was a gully washer. And as we drove along on Woodward, sewers had backed up, cars were stalling in the middle of Woodward, and it does seem that it is heavier than we remember. And so that's not just a perception.
No, even though climate scientists are always careful to warn us that we can't attribute any particular happening, we have seen that rain intensities in this area have been increasing. And the statistics vary. We think in the last 5 years, federal scientists have said that heavy rains are up 45%. So there really is something there.
And you co-authored a report on climate change vulnerability in Detroit for the Detroit Climate Action Collaborative. And I saw that you called this something like a slow Hurricane Katrina. How so?
Oh, yes. I don't like to unnecessarily alarm people.
Sure.
But I think we need to all be concerned, particularly with vulnerable populations, as we have more extreme events. We're fortunate in Michigan in that what we see with climate change involves warmer temperatures in winter and more intense rain events. We're not going to have probably the droughts, the wildfires, some of the other extremes that are going to happen elsewhere in the United States.
We're seeing it now. Yes.
Exactly. But I think what we need to be aware of is even in cities such as Detroit, Grand Rapids, other places, we have vulnerable populations. And in 1995, when there was an extreme heat event in Chicago, we saw over 700 people die.
We had that happen in Michigan. I remember it very, very well.
Yes. And so as one of the things that climate scientists are telling us is that we're going to have more frequent, intense, long-lasting heat extremes. And so that's one thing that we have to be really paying attention to is thinking, can we respond to people in a timely way? Do we know where vulnerable populations are? And there's the emergency response, and then there's long-term responses about how do we shape our cities in ways that help reduce the likelihood of hotspots, of urban heat islands occurring in cities.
And as we talk about heat, how does that also fit in then with the heavy rain situation when we see this 45% increase in heavy rain?
Right. Well, these are complex and linked systems that I won't pretend to describe in detail. I rely on my colleagues for that. But really, when we see elevated temperatures, there's more energy in the systems, and that means often there are more rain events that result in this.
They're more ferocious.
So, yes. So there are forcing mechanisms that are very linked between these.
But they are linked, and you're working with other scholars and the Graham Institute for Sustainability to study just how the changing climate is impacting cities in the Great Lakes. So as we say that, beyond the wow, we saw cars, you know, stranded on main streets because the sewers couldn't handle it, what kinds of changes are you finding?
Well, in thinking with cities, what they can do, one thing is infrastructure. So cities have traditionally planned their futures much based on past experiences, happenings. So this, what were the temperatures expected to be? And now we need with the changing climate situation to alter some of those. So, for example, in a water system, there will be considerations of these curves. They're called intensity, duration, and frequency curves, and they help you consider how much your system will need to contain, hold, and when you have an extreme rain event. We're seeing that these are increasing and they're changing. They're shifting the patterns, particularly in the complex Great Lakes region where we have many microclimates in that. So cities shouldn't do what they've always done. They now have to consider new information on climate as they plan ahead. So the IDF curves are important things for stormwater management. We see also, too, when we think about green buildings and sustainable buildings, the way we model energy in buildings is based on what's called the typical meteorological year. Mm-hmm. That's from 1970. It's actually different now. And so as we again, much of urban planning is trying to think into the future, which is challenging with uncertainty, but we need to realize we need to incorporate new information to make better decisions.
And here we're talking about cities needing to think in new ways, but dealing with creaky old infrastructure like our sewer systems.
Absolutely. We see it in Detroit and many, many cities, mm-hmm. all over the country. But particularly we're challenged in cities like Detroit, Toledo, and Cleveland, Chicago that have combined sewer systems. So that means one pipe is used for the sewage and for the stormwater. So that usually works just fine on a regular day. Mm-hmm. But we saw in 2011 where we had a lot of intense rainfalls, the systems become overwhelmed and you can't flood the wastewater treatment plant. So what you have to do is directly release this partially treated or untreated effluent and mixture of stormwater right into the receiving waters, which in the case of Detroit is into the Detroit River and into the Great Lakes system.
In fact, I saw one statistic. Was I right? 32 billion gallons of untreated or partially treated sewage poured into the Detroit and Rouge Rivers.
It's amazing. It's a huge wastewater treatment plant there in Detroit that yeah. can treat 930 million gallons a day. But some of these rain events, twice as much water is flowing into them. And so how do we, again, think about changing that system and even upgrade? So can we separate the systems, which they're trying to do in places like Toledo, create separate stormwater and sewage systems? But then also we have to consider this new information about how we're going to, in winter and spring particularly, have increased precipitation.
And yet it's no secret of Detroit's money problems, and the ability to even keep streetlights on is a challenge, let alone what would be incredibly costly changes to the storm drain system, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And so this is one of the interesting things from a planning perspective,
yeah.
is that cities are dealing with trying to maintain or improve services today, often with limited finances. And they're also trying to look ahead and say, you're telling me that I have to upsize this system when it's not even working that well today.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a moving target that you're trying to hit to think about. I like to think about it as, how do we understand systematic uncertainty? So how do we make certain signposts or targets that we say, okay, we're pretty confident these things are going to happen, but within those have robust approaches to manage when, again, the variability is a lot of what we're talking about here. And cities trying to manage more variability is an extreme challenge.
You are investigating ways that urban planning can enhance resilience. So I'm wondering, have there been action initiatives that you've discovered that really have made a difference in the way our cities respond to climate change? Are people doing things that are worth learning from?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are cities around the world that are acting. It's interesting. Global climate change has to be addressed for mitigation at the global scale. But locally, our cities are often tasked with responding and adapting to these changes. So they're kind of where the situations have to be realized about what are we going to do. But there's some really fascinating work coming out from many cities. The city of Toronto is doing some very good work about identifying vulnerability and really prioritizing if they have a power outage during an extreme heat event when air conditioning would stop. Mm-hmm. How, you know, what are the parts of the city we need to worry about? Where are vulnerable people? In the city of Toronto, they have many high rises, and they know that within 2 hours, if the power goes out in a building with inoperable windows, it's no longer habitable. We put many of our seniors in high-rise buildings. And so how do we make sure that we have plans ready to go, again, for the short term, and then in the long term, we think of strategies that aren't just dependent on air conditioning and would be less vulnerable to these changes?
How confident are you that the people who are running cities in Michigan are going to be able to think that far ahead and affect these changes, find the money to do these changes?
Again, I'm really impressed that many cities are trying to take actions. So finding money for some of these things is key. And one of the creative strategies that's happening in Ann Arbor and in other places across the country is using a stormwater utility approach where you levy a fee, not a tax, but a fee for how much stormwater you contribute. So it's a way to capture an environmental externality, make people realize they're contributing to the system and give them incentives to do on-site stormwater management. what I'm always amazed is we've got to get more and more creative all the time mm-hmm. about how to tie people to these systems and make them recognize that we're all contributing and we all have to kind of take it on at, almost at a personal level to lessen some of our demands.
It certainly seems like your students have their work cut out with them as they shape the cities of the future.
Yes, we think so. And hopefully the fun part is they're so enthusiastic and hopeful that it keeps me hopeful too.
Dr. Larissa Larson is an associate professor in the Urban and Regional Planning Program at the University of Michigan, and she was kind enough to join us in the studio. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.